Chapter 8, The 52-Year Period. The works of Fernando de Alva Ixtlilxochitl, the early Mexican scholar, circa 1568 to 1648, who was able to read old Mexican texts, preserve the ancient tradition according to which the multiple of 52-year periods played an important role in the recurrence of world catastrophes. Here we have a relevant footnote from Ixtlilxochitl's Obras Históricas. In the Codex Vaticanus, the world ages are reckoned in multiples of 52 years, with a changing number of years as an addition to these figures. A. Humboldt, in his researches, contraposed the lengths of the world ages in the Vatican manuscript, number 3738, and their lengths in the system of the tradition preserved by Ixtlilxochitl. For ages of 105 years are referred to by Censorinus, in his Liber de Die Natali, as having taken place, according to the belief of the Etruscans, between world catastrophes presaged by celestial portents. Back to the main text. He asserts also that only 52 years elapsed between two great catastrophes, each of which terminated a world age. As I have already pointed out, the Israelite tradition counts 40 years of wandering in the desert. Between the time when the Israelites left the desert and started the difficult task of the conquest, and the time of the battle at Beth Horon, 12 years may well have passed. The conquest of Canaan took 14 years, and the entire duration of Joshua's leadership amounted to 28 years. Now there exists a remarkable fact. The natives of pre-Columbian Mexico expected a new catastrophe at the end of every period of 52 years and congregated to await the event. Quote, "When the night of this ceremony arrived, all the people were seized with fear and waited in anxiety for what might take place. They were afraid that it would be the end of the human race and that the darkness of night may become permanent. The sun may not rise anymore." End quote. They watched for the appearance of the planet Venus, and when, on the feared day, no catastrophe occurred, the people of Maya rejoiced. They brought human sacrifices and offered the hearts of prisoners whose chests they opened with knives of flint. On that night, when the 52-year period ended, a great bonfire announced to the fearful crowds that a new period of grace had been granted and a new Venus cycle started. The period of 52 years, regarded by the ancient Mexicans as the interval between two world catastrophes, was definitely related by them to the planet Venus, and this period of Venus was observed by both the Mayas and the Aztecs. The old Mexican custom of sacrificing to the morning star survived in human sacrifices by the Skeetie Pawnee of Nebraska in years when the morning star, quote, appeared especially bright, or in years when there was a comet in the sky, end quote. What had Venus to do with the catastrophes that brought the world to the brink of destruction? Here is a question that will carry us very far indeed. Jubilee. I shall postpone only a little giving the answer to the question just posed. First, I should like to find an explanation for the institution of the Jubilee year of the Israelites. Every seventh year, according to the law, was a sabbatical year during which the land had to be left fallow and Jewish slaves set free. The 50th year was a Jubilee year, when the land not only had to be left fallow, but had to be returned to its original proprietors. According to the law, one could not convey his land forever. The deed of sale was but a lease for whatever number of years remained until the Jubilee year. The year was proclaimed by the blowing of horns on the Day of Atonement. Quote, "In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land, and ye shall hallow the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family." Ever since, exegetes have labored over the biblical statement that the Jubilee year was to be observed every 50th year. The seventh sabbatical year is the 49th year, and the space of the seven Sabbaths of the year shall be unto thee 49 years, and ye shall hallow the 50th year. To leave the land fallow for 2 consecutive years was too great a demand, and cannot be explained by the need of the soil under cultivation for rest. The festival of the Jubilee, with the return of the land to its original owners and the release of slaves, bears the character of an atonement, and its proclamation on the Day of Atonement emphasizes this still further. Was there any special reason why fear returned every 50 years? The Jubilee of the Mayas must have had a genesis similar to that of the Jubilee of the Israelites. The difference lies in the human character of the festival of the Jews and its inhuman character among the Mayas. But with both peoples, it was a year of atonement, repeating itself every 50th year in the one case and every 52nd year in the other. Comets do not return at exact periods because of perturbations caused by larger planets. In a footnote, we read, Halley's comet has an average period of 77 years, with single periods as short as 74 and a half years, or as long as 79 and a half years. Back to the original text, the Mayas expected the return of a catastrophe every 52nd year because that was the interval between 2 cataclysms that had taken place. It may be that the comet was actually seen again at such intervals. The Jews fasted and prepared themselves for the Day of Judgment on the earliest possible date of its return. The Mayas had their festival when the dreaded time had passed without harm. On the Day of Atonement, the Israelites used to send a scapegoat to Azazel in the desert. Here we have a relevant footnote. The priests used to cast lots for 2 goats. One goat for the Lord and the other as the scapegoat for Azazel. And back to the original text. It was a ceremony of propitiation of Satan. In Egypt, the goat was an animal dedicated to Seth Typhon. Azazel was a fallen star, or Lucifer. It was also called Azael, Azza, or Uzzah. According to the rabbinical legend, Uzzah was the star angel of Egypt. It was thrown into the Red Sea when the Israelites made their passage. According to another legend, the fallen angel Uzzah is chained to the mountains of darkness, the Caucasus. The Arab name of the planet Venus is Al-Uzzah. The Arabs used to bring human sacrifices to Al-Uzzah. Muhammad, too, in his early days, worshipped it, and even today the Arabs seek its help. On the day on which the Jubilee year was proclaimed, the Israelites dispatched a placating offering of a scapegoat to Lucifer. But what had Venus to do with the Jubilee and the Atonement? The birth of Venus. A planet turns and revolves on a quite circular orbit around a greater body, the Sun. It makes contact with another body, a comet, that travels on a stretched-out ellipse. The planet slips from its axis, runs in disorder off its orbit, wanders rather erratically, and in the end is freed from the embrace of the comet. The body on the long ellipse experiences similar disturbances. Drawn off its path, it glides to some new orbit. Its long train of gaseous substances and stones is torn away by the sun or by the planet, or runs away and revolves as a smaller comet along its own ellipse. A part of the tail is retained by the parent comet on its new orbit. Ancient Mexican records give the order of the occurrences. The sun was attacked by Quetzalcoatl. After the disappearance of this serpent-shaped heavenly body, the sun refused to shine, and during 4 days the world was deprived of its light. A great many people died at that time. Thereafter, the snake-like body transformed itself into a great star. The star retained the name of Quetzalcoatl, Quetzalcoatl. This great and brilliant star appeared for the first time in the east. Quetzalcoatl is the well-known name of the planet Venus. Thus we read that, quote, the sun refused to show itself, and during 4 days the world was deprived of light. Then a great star appeared. It was given the name Quetzalcoatl. The sky, to show its anger, caused to perish a great number of people who died of famine and pestilence. End quote. The sequence of seasons and the duration of days and nights became disarranged. It was then that the people of Mexico regulated anew the reckoning of days, nights, and hours according to the difference in time. Quote, "It is a remarkable thing, moreover, that time is measured from the moment of its morning star's appearance. Tlahuizcal Pantuctli, or the morning star, appeared for the first time following the convulsions of the earth overwhelmed by a deluge. It looked like a monstrous serpent. This serpent is adorned with feathers. That is why it is called Quetzalcoatl, Gucumatz, or Kukulcan. Just as the world is about to emerge from the chaos of the great catastrophe, it is seen to appear. The feather arrangement of Quetzalcoatl represents flames of fire." Again, the old texts speak, quote, "of the change that took place at the moment of the great catastrophe of the deluge, in the condition of many constellations, principal among them being precisely Tlahuizcalpantuctli, or the star of Venus." End quote. The cataclysm, accompanied by a prolonged darkness, appears to have been that of the days of the Exodus, when a tempest of cinders darkened the world, disturbed in its rotation. Some of the references may allude to the subsequent catastrophe of the time of the conquest by Joshua, when the sun remained for more than a day in the sky of the old world. Since it was the same comet that on both occasions made contact with the earth, and at each of the contacts the comet changed its own orbit, the relevant question is not on which occasion did the comet change its orbit, but first of all, which comet changed to a planet, or which planet was a comet in historical times. The transformation of the comet into a planet began on contact with the Earth in the middle of the second millennium before the present era, and was carried a step further one jubilee period later. After the dramatic events of the time of Exodus, the Earth was shrouded in dense clouds for decades, and observation of stars was not possible. After the second contact, Venus, the new and splendid member of the solar family, was seen moving along its orbit. It was in the days of Joshua, a time designation meaningful to the reader of the sixth book of the scriptures. But for the ancients, it was, quote, "the time of Agog." As I explained above, he was the king by whose name the cataclysm, the deluge of Ogyges, was known, and who, according to Greek tradition, laid the foundation of Thebes in Egypt. In The City of God, by Augustine, it is written, quote, "From the book of Marcus Varro, entitled Of the Race of the Roman People, I cite word for word the following instance, quote, "There occurred a remarkable celestial portent, for Castor records that in the brilliant star Venus, called Vesperugo by Plautus, and the lovely Hesperus by Homer, there occurred so strange a prodigy that it changed its color, size, form, course, which never happened before nor since. Adrastus of Cyzicus and Dion of Naples, famous mathematicians, said that this occurred in the reign of Ogyges." End quote. The fathers of the church considered Ogyges a contemporary of Moses. Agog, mentioned in the blessing of Balaam, was the king Ogyges. The upheaval that took place in the days of Joshua and Agog, the deluge that occurred in the days of Ogyges, the metamorphosis of Venus in the days of Ogyges, the star Venus which appeared in the sky of Mexico after a protracted night and a great catastrophe, all these occurrences are related. Augustine went on to make a curious comment on the transformation of Venus. Quote, "Certainly that phenomenon disturbed the canons of the astronomers, so as to take upon them to affirm that this which happened to the morning star, Venus, never happened before nor since. But we read in the divine books that even the sun itself stood still when a holy man, Joshua, the son of Nun, begged this from God." End quote. Augustine had no inkling that Castor, as quoted by Varro, in the Book of Jasher, as quoted in the Book of Joshua, refer to the same occurrence. Are Hebrew sources silent on the birth of a new star in the days of Joshua? They are not. It is written in a Samaritan chronicle that during the invasion of Palestine by the Israelites under Joshua, a new star was born in the east. Quote, "A star arose out of the east against which all magic is vain." End quote. Chinese chronicles record that, quote, "A brilliant star appeared in the days of Yao, the blazing star." Plato, citing the Egyptian priest, said that the world conflagration associated with Phaeton was caused by a shifting of bodies in the sky which move around the earth. As we have reason to assume that it was the comet Venus that, after two contacts with the earth, eventually became a planet, we shall do well to inquire, did Phaeton turn into the morning star? Phaeton, which means the blazing star, became the morning star. The earliest writer who refers to the transformation of Phaeton into a planet is Hesiod. This transformation is related by Hyginus in his Astronomy, where he tells how Phaeton, that caused the conflagration of the world, was struck by a thunderbolt of Jupiter and was placed by the sun among the stars, planets. It was the general belief that Phaeton changed into the morning star. On the island of Crete, Atimnios was the name of the unlucky driver of the sun's chariot. He was worshipped as the evening star, which is the same as the morning star. The birth of the morning star, or the transformation of a legendary person, Istihar, Phaeton, Quetzalcoatl, into the morning star, was a widespread motif in the folklore of the Oriental and Occidental peoples. The Tahitian tradition of the birth of the morning star is narrated on the Society Island in the Pacific. The Mangaian legend says that with the birth of a new star, the earth was battered by countless fragments. The Buryats, Kyrgyz, and Yakuts of Siberia, and the Eskimos of North America also tell of the birth of the planet Venus. A blazing star disrupted the visible movement of the sun, caused a world conflagration, and became the morning/evening star. This may be found not only in the legends and traditions, but also in astronomical books of the ancient peoples of both hemispheres. The four-planet system. By asserting that the planet Venus was born in the first half of the second millennium, I also assume that in the third millennium only four planets could have been seen, and that in astronomical charts of this early period, the planet Venus cannot be found. In an ancient Hindu table of planets attributed to the year 3102, Venus alone among the visible planets is absent. The Brahmins of the early period did not know the five-planet system, and only in a later, middle, period did the Brahmins speak of five planets. Babylonian astronomy, too, had a four-planet system. In ancient prayers, the planets Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and Mercury are invoked. The planet Venus is missing, and one speaks of, quote, the four-planet system of the ancient astronomers of Babylonia, end quote. Here we have a relevant footnote. E.F. Widener, Handbuch der Babylonischen Astronomie, 1915, page 61, writes of a star list found in Boghaz Kui in Asia Minor, quote, that the planet Venus is missing will not startle anybody who knows the eminent importance of the four-planet system in the Babylonian astronomy, end quote. Widener supposes that Venus is missing in the list of planets because, quote, she belongs to a triad with the moon and the sun, end quote, on Ishtar in early inscriptions, page 175. Back to the original text. These four-planet systems and the inability of the ancient Hindus and Babylonians to see Venus in the sky, even though it is more conspicuous than the other planets, are puzzling, unless Venus was not among the planets. On a later date, quote, the planet Venus receives the appellative, the great star that joins the great stars. The great stars are, of course, the four planets Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, and Venus joins them as a fifth planet. End quote. Apollonius Rhodius refers to a time, quote, when not all the orbs were yet in the heavens. one of the planets is a comet. Democritus, circa 460 to circa 370 BC, a contemporary of Plato and one of the great scholars of antiquity, is accused by the moderns of not having understood the planetary character of Venus. Here we have a relevant footnote. Democritus says that the fixed stars are in the highest place, after those the planets, after which the Sun, Venus, and the Moon in their order. Plutarch, Morals. Back to the original text. Plutarch quotes him as speaking of Venus as if it were not one of the planets, but apparently the author of the treatises on geometry, optics, and astronomy, no longer extant, knew more about Venus than his critics think. From quotations which have survived in other authors, we know that Democritus built a theory of the creation and destruction of worlds, which sounds like the modern planetesimal theory without its shortcomings. He wrote, quote, "The worlds are unequally distributed in space. Here there are more, there are fewer. Some are waxing, some are in their prime, some waning, coming into being in one part of the universe, ceasing in another part. The cause of their perishing is collision with one another." Here we have another relevant footnote. Hippolytus, The Refutation of All Heresies, 1, Chapter 11. Plato, who is a contemporary of Democritus, similarly described the destruction of the Earth and its future rebirth in a faraway region of the universe. Timaeus. Back to the original text. Aristotle quoted the opinion of Democritus, quote, "Stars have been seen when comets dissolve." Among the early Greek scholars, Pythagoras of the 6th century is generally credited with having had access to some secret science. His pupils, and their pupils, the so-called Pythagoreans, were cautious not to disclose their science to anyone who did not belong to their circle. Aristotle wrote of their interpretation of the nature of comets, quote, "Some of the Italians, called Pythagoreans, say that the comet is one of the planets, but that it appears at great intervals of time and only rises a little above the horizon. This is the case with Mercury, too. Because it only rises a little above the horizon, it often fails to be seen and consequently appears at great intervals of time." End quote. This is a confused presentation of a theory, but it is possible to trace the truth in the Pythagorean teaching, which was not understood by Aristotle. A comet is a planet which returns at long intervals. One of the planets, which rises only a little above the horizon, was still regarded by the Pythagoreans of the 4th century as a comet. With the knowledge obtained from other sources, it is easy to guess that by, quote, "one of the planets" is meant Venus. Only Mercury and Venus rise a little above the horizon. Aristotle disagreed with the Pythagorean scholars, who considered one of the 5 planets to be a comet. Quote, "These views involve impossibilities. This is the case, first, with those who say that the comet is one of the planets. More comets than one have often appeared simultaneously. As a matter of fact, no planet has been observed besides the 5, and all of them are often visible above the horizon together at the same time. Further, comets are often found to appear, as well, when all the planets are visible as when some are not." With these words, Aristotle, who did not learn the secrets of the Pythagoreans directly, tried to refute their teaching by arguing that all 5 planets are in their places when a comet appears, as if the Pythagoreans thought that all comets were one and the same planet, leaving its usual path at certain times. But the Pythagoreans did not think that one planet represents all comets. According to Plutarch, they taught that each of the comets has its own orbit and period of revolution. Hence, the Pythagoreans apparently knew that the comet which is one of the planets is Venus. The comet Venus. During the centuries when Venus was a comet, it had a tail. The early traditions of the people of Mexico, written down in pre-Columbian days, relate that Venus smoked, quote, "The star that smoked, ba estrella que humeaba, was Citlali Coloha." which the Spaniards called Venus. "Now I ask," said Alexander Humboldt, "what optical illusion could give Venus the appearance of a star throwing out smoke?" Sahagún, the 16th century Spanish authority on Mexico, wrote that the Mexicans called a comet, quote, "a star that smoked." It may thus be concluded that since the Mexicans called Venus a star that smoked, they considered it a comet. It is also said in the Vedas that the star Venus looks like fire with smoke. Apparently, the star had a tail, dark in the daytime and luminous at night. In very concrete form, this luminous tail, which Venus had in earlier centuries, is mentioned in the Talmud in the Tractate Shabbat, quote, "fire is hanging down from the planet Venus." This phenomenon was described by the Chaldeans. The planet Venus, quote, "was said to have a beard." This same technical expression, beard, is used in modern astronomy in the description of comets. These parallels and observations made in the valley of the Ganges, on the shores of the Euphrates, and on the coast of the Mexican Gulf prove their objectivity. The question must then be put, not in the form, "what was the illusion of the ancient Toltecs and Mayas?" but, "what was the phenomenon and what was its cause?" A train, large enough to be visible from the Earth and giving the impression of smoke and fire, hung from the planet Venus. Venus, with its glowing train, was a very brilliant body. It is therefore not strange that the Chaldeans described it as a, quote, "bright torch of heaven," also as a, quote, "diamond that illuminates like the sun," and compared its light with the light of the rising sun. At present, the light of Venus is less than 1/1,000,000th of the light of the sun. Quote, "a stupendous prodigy in the sky," the Chaldeans called it. The Hebrews similarly described the planet, quote, "the brilliant light of Venus blazes from one end of the cosmos to the other end." The Chinese astronomical text from Su Chao refers to the past when, quote, "Venus was visible in full daylight and, while moving across the sky, rivaled the sun in brightness." As late as the 7th century, Assurbanipal wrote about Venus, Ishtar, quote, "who is clothed with fire and bears aloft a crown of awful splendor," end quote. The Egyptians under Seti thus described Venus, Sekhmet, quote, "a circling star which scatters its flame in fire, a flame of fire in her tempest," end quote. Possessing a tail and moving on a not yet circular orbit, Venus was more of a comet than a planet and was called a smoking star or a comet by the Mexicans. They also called it by the name of Xontemoc or the Main. The Arabs called Ishtar, Venus, by the name of Zabaj or one with hair, as did the Babylonians. Quote, "sometimes there are hairs attached to the planets," end quote, wrote Pliny. An old description of Venus must have served as a basis for his assertion. But hair, or coma, is a characteristic of comets, and in fact, comet is derived from the Greek word for hair. The Peruvian name, chasca, wavy-haired, is still the name for Venus, though at present the morning star is definitely a planet and has no tail attached to it. The coma of Venus changed its form with the position of the planet. When the planet Venus approaches the Earth now, it is only partly illuminated, a portion of the disk being in shadow. It has phases like the moon. At this time, being closer to the Earth, it is most brilliant. When Venus had a coma, the horns of its crescent must have been extended by the illuminated portions of the coma. It thus had two long appendages and looked like a bull's head. Sanchoniathon says that Astarte, Venus, had a bull's head. The planet was even called Ashtaroth Karnaim, or Astarte of the Horns, a name given to a city in Canaan in honor of this deity. The golden calf worshipped by Aaron and the people at the foot of Sinai was the image of the star. Rabbinical authorities say that, quote, "the devotion of Israel to this worship of the bull is in part explained by the circumstance that, while passing through the Red Sea, they beheld the celestial throne, and most distinctly of the four creatures about the throne, they saw the ox. End quote. The likeness of a calf was placed by Jeroboam in Dan, the great temple of the northern kingdom. Tishtraya of the Zen Avesta, the star that attacks the planets, quote, the bright and glorious Tishtraya mingles his shape with light, moving in the shape of a golden horned bull. End quote. The Egyptians similarly pictured the planet and worshipped it in the effigy of a bull. The cult of a bull sprung up also in Mycenaean Greece. A golden cow head with a star on its brow was found in Mycenae, on the Greek mainland. The people of faraway Samoa, primitive tribes that depend on oral tradition as they have no art of writing, repeat to this day, quote, the planet Venus became wild and horns grew out of her head. Examples and references could be multiplied ad libitum. The astronomical text of the Babylonians described the horns of the planet Venus. Sometimes one of the two horns became more prominent. Because the astronomical works of antiquity have so much to say about the horns of Venus, modern scholars have asked themselves whether the Babylonians could have seen the phases of Venus, which cannot now be distinguished with the naked eye. Here we have a relevant footnote. It is well known that not a few passages in the cuneiform texts on astrology speak of the right or the left horn of Venus. It was deduced that the phases of Venus were observed already by the Babylonians and that Galileo in the 16th century was not the first to see them. Schomburger, De Horniar Venus. Back to the original text, Galileo saw them for the first time in modern history when he used his telescope. The long horns of Venus could not have been seen without the aid of a telescopic lens. These horns were the illuminated portions of the coma of Venus, which stretched toward the Earth. These horns could also have extended toward the Sun as Venus approached the solar orb, since comets were repeatedly observed with projections in the direction of the Sun, while the tails of the comets are regularly directed away from the Sun. When Venus approached close to one of the planets, its horns grew longer. This is the phenomenon the astrologers of Babylon observed and described when Venus neared Mars.